Better than this, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do this shit.
What's better than this, guys? Being dudes here on the Draft Dudes Podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Tuesday Takes on Takes edition of the show. Got some spicy stuff, got some funny stuff. It's going to be good. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you. I am excited for our best show of the week because we don't have to come up with the content. We just have to react to it.
There's some good stuff in here. We'll get to it. There's like a Will Disley take in here that's just tremendous about unicorns. So
I saw that tweet.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that was tattletaked.
Yeah, we got some good tattle takes today.
We got a lot of tattle takes this week from what I saw on the Twitter machine.
Yep.
All right. Well, do you want to give or receive the first one?
I would like to receive the first one.
Okay. Being selfish. I like it. Take from Scotty Emery. Diving right in today. This is Matt Nagy is a superb leader and will keep the Bears head coaching job for a good few years. He's going to have to hand over play calling sooner rather than later, though. He think he's constantly trying to outsmart himself. Hashtag takes on takes.
You know, I'm not certain that I'm into the weeds every day on the Chicago Bears, but I've seen enough, like, just different locker room videos, different mic'd up sessions, just to kind of get a feel for Nagy as a leader. And he does strike me in that way. He does strike me as somebody that can really control a locker room and, you know, build a culture and get guys to buy in and compete at their hardest. You know, there's no question that I feel like he can do those things. I've been very impressed with those elements of Nagy. I think that's a challenge for a lot of coaches in terms of like letting go of those play calling responsibilities. And I get it, especially if you're an offensive guy. Like, the reason you have that job is because you were able to call plays and execute an offense and get it to be very effective. And you want to preserve those things and you want to have that control. And I think it's not true for every coach. Some coaches are able to continue with those play calling duties and still manage the football team at large very effectively. But, you know, if it's something where we think this could be a difference maker for Nagy and the performance of his team, then he's got to let that go. So, you know, I don't know that I'm intimate enough, if that makes sense, with the Bears to say that's their definite problem. But it's certainly something that, you know, piques my interest and it should be something considered. I don't know if the bigger problem isn't just not having the most effective quarterback play consistently. Next one here comes from Von Tell. Oh, by the way, everyone's back on the Jared Goff sucks train. So those are going to be coming up in our takes here. Von Tell says, Kyler Murray is the second best quarterback in his division, of course, after the obvious Russ.
I like Von Tell. I think if you framed this physical talent, this could be a reasonable take. Would you not agree with me?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Kyler Murray is the second best physical talent at quarterback in the NFC West. I don't think we have a big enough sample size, and we've seen kind of the peaks and valleys of Jared Goff, and it's really easy right now because he's in a valley to emotionally detach yourself from him being a good quarterback. If Jared Goff finishes the year, this year, and continues to play to the standard that we've seen thus far this season, and Kyler Murray continues to, like, quietly do a really good job with the Arizona Cardinals, because Kyler Murray has done quietly a very good job with the Arizona Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Arizona's won a few football games. Kyler's not turning the ball over a ton. He's avoiding taking big hits, even if it means he has to sit down on his rump in the backfield. This is a funny play this past weekend.
Yeah.
But it's a smart play for a guy that's built like him. So I think there's a discussion that could be had here, but that conversation needs to be had at the end of the season, not after week six. Because Jared Goff last year, statistically speaking, was phenomenal. Jared Goff the year before that, statistically speaking, was phenomenal. He has his own limitations. I think Kyler's obviously a much better physical talent, and you can make that statement with as a stone cold fact right now, but I don't think you can just wash Jared Goff away because he's off to a slow start. Take from Dennis. LSU at Alabama in week 11 of the college football season is going to be a more fascinating game than Oklahoma at Texas Tech in 2016. Now, of course, Joe, the big thing about that game was what?
Baker Mayfield versus Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to tell you, Dennis, I don't agree with you at all, especially because I have the hindsight perspective on Texas Tech, Oklahoma. That game was 66-59, Mayfield versus Mahomes. They both had 854 total yards, exactly the same amount for both teams. Texas Tech goes 22 of 27 on third and fourth downs combined.
Wait, yeah, what?
Yeah. I'll repeat.
Texas Tech went 22 of 27 on third and fourth down?
Yes. Now, okay,
oh, my God.
Listen, that's amazing. But let me tell you something else that this might be more amazing, right? Okay, you got the picture here. They scored 59 points. They had 42 first downs. They went 22 of 27 on third and fourth down combined at 854 yards. Oklahoma scored 66 points, the exact same 854 yards. Kyle, just take a guess at what their combined third and fourth down ratio was.
How many attempts were there?
That's the fascinating piece of it to me.
Oh, they were probably like 5 of 8. They probably never hit third down.
6 of 11, Kyle. Six of 11. No, nothing will ever be more fascinating than that game. And I think, you know, the reality is LSU and Alabama, we're excited for the game. It's the most exciting game on the schedule this year in college football. But those teams have more defense than these two teams had. And I think it's going to be a good competitive football game with a ton of interest and all those types of things. But that, I don't know that you're going to be able to trump Oklahoma, Texas Tech 2016. 22 of 27. What?
That's crazy.
All right. Mike Krause says Danielle Hunter is a top 5 edge rusher in the league and doesn't get the recognition he deserves.
Okay. Let's work through this together, Joe. We're in the maze together and we need to get the cheese. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Would you say that Myles Garrett is a better edge rusher than Danielle Hunter?
Yes.
Myles Garrett has 6 or 9 sacks on the season so far, by the way. He's tearing it up.
Yep.
Would you say Khalil Mack is a better edge rusher than Danielle Hunter?
Yep.
This is where it gets a little weird. Cameron Jordan, do you consider him an edge rusher?
Yeah, I do. Only and from the left think, side, though.
Do you think Cameron Jordan's a better edge rusher than Danielle Hunter?
Splitting hair. This is where I think you start splitting hairs. They're in the same tier.
They're in the same tier. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any other name? I'll ask it this way. Is there any other name that you think is head and shoulders above the tier that we're in right now?
Like that the Mac Garrett normal Von Miller tier?
Right.
Nah, man. I mean.
Okay. So Von Miller, you want to put Von Miller in that bucket?
Normally. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think he deserves.
I don't think we're going to write him off based off 6 games. And
right. Yeah. Yeah.
What about JJ Watt?
Yeah, he's more. Do
you consider him an edge rusher?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't consider him a true edge, no.
But he can line up on the edge.
He can. He can. But I would.
What about the Bosa brothers?
Oh, man. No, they're not in that tier. They're in the Hunter Cam Jordan tier.
So depending on your flavor, you could come to a logical argument to say Danielle Hunter's one of the 5 best edge rushers in the NFL.
Yeah, I think you'd really be splitting hairs sorting out 4, 5, 6, 7. Like, you know, they're in that range, my opinion.
Okay. Well, Nick's played 6 games. Joey has some durability questions that he needs to resolve. I'll buy this if you're putting Danielle Hunter at 5 and we're not counting JJ Watt. Sure. And he's, I think we saw he's the youngest pass rusher to achieve how many sacks?
And got probably 100, right?
100? No. Come on. He's 25.
I thought you were talking about JJ Watt.
So. No, Danielle Hunter. He just went over, he's at 46 sacks for his career now.
So probably 40. He's 24 years old.
Yeah, whether it's 40 or 45, like that's a bonkers number of sacks.
24, Kyle.
At 24. And he's been in the league like 4 years now.
This is his 5th season. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been in forever.
Now he turns 25 like this week, so there's that, or next week. But
well, yes, I will take the Nail Hunter at 5 if you're giving me top 5 edges.
Yep,
like pure edges. Take from Dion, Joe nice. Burrow. This is an interesting take.
Yeah,
Joe Burrow is the quarterback people wish Justin Herbert could be. Burrow will be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft, and Herbert will go in the second round.
A lot of layers. I wish it was just the first sentence. So
you can do that. I'll take the other half.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, Burrow is the quarterback people wish Justin Herbert could be. I think this is a really interesting discussion because Herbert almost falls victim to an extent of there just being too much tape. And we've had such a large sample size to really get frustrated with him not improving on his weaknesses and kind of being the same type of player for 3 seasons and being flashy, but still really having issues under duress and having issues coming off his first read and some questionable decision-making. And when that's true for 3 consecutive seasons, you can get frustrated. Whereas Joe Burrow, we kind of, nobody was really talking about him last year, right? Like he was this game manager for LSU, probably the best quarterback they've had in a long time, but that wasn't really saying much because the bar was so low. And then Joe Brady comes into this LSU coaching staff and reinvigorates his passing attack. And all of a sudden, Joe Burrow's playing the best quarterback of anybody in college football. And so you have really contrasting context because Burrow is just lighting the world on fire and he's somewhat new, whereas Herbert's been the same guy for 3 years.
Yeah, Joe, and I'm going to take the second half of this. Joe Burrow will be the first quarterback taken in the 2020 NFL draft, and Herbert will go in the second round. First and foremost, I think Justin Herbert has way too many traits that NFL coaches are going to be attracted to for him to slide to the second round. There's a supply and demand issue here. Looks like Tennessee might be in the quarterback market. We've got Cincinnati in the quarterback market. Miami's in the quarterback market. You got all these teams that are playoff contenders who have aging quarterbacks who may potentially be in the quarterback market. I have a really hard time seeing Herbert with all of his quote-unquote upside because he's a very different case study. Let me know if you agree with me. Very different case study than the likes of like a Drew Lock.
Yes, I agree.
So Joe Burrow being the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft is the interesting part. And I'm telling you right now, Joe, I can already see it. I can see this happening because the knocks on Tua are all the stereotypical, well, he's 6 foot, he's left-handed, supporting cast around him. Joe Burrow's 6'4", right-handed quarterback. He is, from an intangible standpoint, he's a coach's son. All of those dumb little generic boxes that people want to not check for Tua, Burrow checks them. And he's got like this subtle swagger to him. So as Burrow's kind of been developing into a player, I actually sent in Slack to you and Ben an interview that he had done. And I've been really impressed listening to him talking about fresh off the Florida game, talking about how the offensive line did such a great job and he took responsibility for the few pressures that he felt from Florida by saying that he called the wrong protection. So knowing that he's has that kind of control of the LSU offense at the line of scrimmage is a really big relief, especially after seeing how Josh Rosen coming into the NFL as a talented passer, but a guy who wasn't asked to do a lot of that kind of stuff, knowing Burrow has that on his plate right now, I can see this happening. I don't know if I would say I would be super stunned if I saw it happen.
Right, and Burrow's like, he's done with all his classes, so he's like a professional quarterback right now. He's like a couple online classes that he takes, but otherwise he is preparing like, this is the only thing in the world he has to do, and it's definitely paying off for him.
And he's going to undoubtedly be down at the Senior Bowl and get an opportunity for up close and personal for a week, hands-on.
Yeah.
Like, he is going to be able to exploit the draft process in its entirety with Pro Day, team visits, the Combine, the All-Star Circuit, And you just know based on his background, he's going to be a guy that blows people away. I think there's a legitimate chance that this happens. Take from the sports nut. If Christian McCaffrey keeps this pace up, he deserves to win the NFL MVP despite not being a quarterback.
Whew. I think I'm one of the most eager people in the world to give MVPs to non-quarterbacks. And, you know, McCaffrey has certainly been exceptional this year in 6 games, 923 yards from scrimmage and 9 touchdowns. It's unbelievable, right? I mean, just totally a multifaceted player that is so important to that team. I don't know, like, how do you put him above Russ Wilson or Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes or, you know, that's where it gets difficult for me, man. I think he'll have a case. He'll get votes. I'm not sure that I give it to him over Russ if he continues playing like he has. Alan Fisher says Atlanta should fire Quinn at the end of the season and hire Lincoln Riley. I think Riley might be willing to go to a non-tire fire franchise like Atlanta.
Well, last 2 years, Atlanta's looked like a tire fire. I guess my dilemma here is what kind of positioning does Atlanta finish with in terms of how long is Matt Ryan going to play? How much flexibility do they have with Matt Ryan? Because Matt Ryan really doesn't strike me as a Lincoln Riley type quarterback. Think that's a fair statement to make? Joe? Yes? No?
People thought Chip Kelly had a certain type of quarterback. And, you know, when he got to the NFL and his first quarterback was like whoever they had in Atlanta, right? Was it Sam Bradford?
No, he had Nick Foles the first year. And Foles threw 27 touchdowns and 2 picks.
Yeah, but everybody thought he was going to have like Darren Thomas or something like that, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I just think it has to be a special. I think there has to be some kind of connection that would prompt Riley to jump. And I don't know that Atlanta necessarily has that. Brownstown, Andy, I don't know why you're getting this question.
I'm not taking this. You're getting this.
Okay, give it to me right now.
Blitz 2000 is the greatest football game of all time.
Yeah, there's no question Blitz 2000 is the greatest football video game of all time.
Is it like NBA Jam or something? I've never played it, I promise you.
And you never played NFL Blitz?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty much like an arcade style, like 5-on-5 NFL arcade football game.
What's the appeal? Like head-to-head and just weird, just like crazy stuff happens or what?
I mean, there's pretty cartoonish like collisions between the players and it's like really over the top. And it's more of an arcade versus a simulation. But it's like everything's like bombs away and there's modified rules as far as first downs. And so it's a very fast paced game.
Sounds terrible.
A lot of fun.
Sounds terrible.
I'll see what I can do. See if I can find it. This is interesting from Charlie. Emmanuel Sanders is the wide receiver equivalent to Adam Gase. Both are living off reputations earned by having Peyton Manning play quarterback for the team that they were on / coached.
I don't know. Emmanuel Sanders has been good receiver for a while in the NFL, you know, without Adam Gase. So, I mean, obviously his best year, a couple years with Denver was with, you know, Adam Gase. But every time I watch Emmanuel Sanders, I think he's a really effective football player. He's had his own injuries and those types of things, but I don't think he's a number one receiver in the NFL, but I think he's a very useful part of a receiver core and provides a certain type of skill set that is valuable. So certainly his best years were with Gase, but I don't know that he doesn't deserve the limelight that he's in or whatever people think he is. If you think he's a number one receiver, then you have bad expectations of what Emmanuel Sanders is in the NFL. Here we go. This was turned in by a lot of people here, Kyle.
This was probably referenced to us by like 7 different people this week.
Several people turned this in. Your fantasy tight end, Will Disley of the Seattle Seahawks, He said, if you think about it, unicorns make way more sense than giraffes. A horse with a horn versus a long-necked horse with cheetah spots. The fuck?
I'm letting this sink in. How many animals can you name off the top of your head with a horn?
A rhinoceros.
The way a unicorn horn would be.
Okay. A rhino.
Okay. That's one.
I mean, like a bull, I guess a bull wouldn't count, right?
No. I'm going to be disappointed if you don't get at least one more.
There's some kind of other animal that has one of those things?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's how you put me on the spot to think about animals. It's doesn't go well. What type of animal? Is it a mammal, reptile?
It's a mammal.
Does it have fur?
No, it does not. Not that I know of. I would assume not.
Does it live on the land?
No.
What? I'm lost.
You don't know what a narwhal is?
Oh, those are real?
What, you think they were fake?
I don't know. I've never seen. I go to the zoo a lot. And I never saw one.
You've never seen a narwhal? I
thought that was some kind of a fictional thing.
No. Medium-sized toothed whale that possesses a large tusk from a protruding canine tooth. Lives year-round in Arctic waters around Greenland, Canada, and Russia.
Wow. These things are real, huh?
It's like the cousin of the beluga whale, but it's got a spear on the front.
Isn't there like a famous cartoon one of these that pops up sometimes?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that's what I was thinking of.
Are you thinking of the walrus?
I don't know, Kyle. Are you
kidding me? The cartoon walrus?
This is where you really find out about me is when stuff like this comes
up. Yeah, I guess there's two examples, a sea creature and a land creature, of something with a horn coming out of the front of its face. And the only other like long-necked versions of anything that I could think of are dinosaurs. And then you add in the cheetah spots. I think Will Disley's got a good take.
What about like an anteater or something like that?
Okay, and what is an anteater?
What about like an ostrich? You know? Just ridiculous necks on things? I think the thing about a unicorn... Don't unicorns fly? Isn't that kind of where you...
You talking about My Pretty Ponies?
I mean, that's what I think of when I think about unicorns.
I don't know that necessarily unicorns have to fly unless they have wings.
I think that's a common belief of the unicorn creature is that it flies. And to me, that's where it loses me.
I think this entire conversation has lost our listeners.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. I think Will Disley's got a good take. Take from Mike White, who was turned in by Zach Herbert. This is at least interesting. There will be a 6-win AFC team in the playoffs.
No, not even close.
You're banking on either Houston or Baltimore / Cleveland / Pittsburgh winning their division with 6 wins.
That's right. Exactly. It's not going to happen. That's nuts. I mean, here's the bottom line is of the 5 teams that would be in right now, they all have at least 4 wins. They're going to win 2 more games. I don't think so, man. I don't think so. I don't think. No.
I can see second place in the AFC North having 6 wins.
Sure, but not first.
I can see 9-7, 6-10, 5-11, 2-14, or 3-13.
But 9-7, man. Like, the Ravens could win that division at 9-7, and that's still 3 more wins than 6.
Well, and they get bailed out because the rest of the division sucks.
Right. And then, I mean, between whoever wins the South, whether that's the Colts or the Texans, you know, they're probably going to have 10 wins. I don't think so. I see the point he's trying to make, but I don't think so.
Yeah. I think 7, at least you might see a pathway to 7.
Mr. Thick Boy, the next version of converted players to tight end will be tall running backs. Look at George Kittle's physical skill set.
Well, we've already seen this to a certain degree with Jalen Hurd, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a big slot wide receiver for San Francisco, was drafted in the 3rd round, was a running back in Tennessee, transitioned to Baylor.
Who are these tall tight ends, or these tall running backs that you have to have some people in mind, right?
I mean, Memphis flexes Patrick Taylor out into the slot. I'm not suggesting that to be the case, but it's like, I think that's the biggest thing for me when I'm trying to find this pathway, right? Is what's more valuable, being a two down running back that'll get 8 carries a game, or being a guy that can be a mismatch as a receiving option? It makes sense because there's such a surplus of running backs.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And these guys, a lot of these guys are already playing linebacker, right?
Right. Yeah.
I'm looking over the draftnetwork.com's running back rankings for the 2020 NFL draft. Najee Harris is 6'2". Patrick Taylor, 6'3", 223. That's it. That's the only guys that we have right now that are – oh, Siwo Alunilula from TCU is 6'3", 225.
He's a physical freak.
So that's kind of the – that's the 6'2 or higher guys that we have listed in however many, probably, I'd guess, 30 or 40 running backs on the site right now.
Lock it in.
Yeah.
All right. We got one more here from Bull Bittler. Thursday Night Football's result will put a halt to the Daniel Jones hype train, only for it to get going again 10 days later when he wins a shootout against the number one pick.
So we have Giants Cardinals this week, 1:00.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Arizona's, they're both playing better, right? Giants are coming. They were idle last week, right? No, they played Thursday night. So they have extra time to prepare for this game. I could see Daniel Jones having a good game against Arizona. I can see Kyler having a good game against the Giants. I mean,
defensively, Arizona's defense, that their defensive numbers are horrible.
Pat Pete comes back this week.
29th in points allowed and 30th in yards allowed.
Pat Pete comes back this week.
How much does Pat Pete can help the pass rush?
I don't know. Both of these teams are giving up like 300 passing yards a game. I think Daniel Jones will have a better game than Kyler Murray.
Cardinals have not generated a turnover in their last 3 games.
It's challenging. They won, and then they won a couple games too, right?
What, brother? Arizona's won their last 2, so, but
without creating a turnover.
Without creating a turnover, and hear me out.
Okay.
You know how many first downs the Falcons got against the Cardinals last week?
I don't.
You want to venture a guess?
I don't know. 13.
31.
You're kidding.
No.
You're kidding. 31.
No. Arizona's given up over 400 yards in 4 of their 6 games and has conceded at least 21 first downs in every single game played so far this year. They have 3 turnovers on the year, and 2 of them came week 1 against Detroit.
And with all that said, the Giants are allowing more yards per game so far this year.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And I guess, like, we should probably slow our roll on Arizona here a little bit. They needed a last-second field goal to beat Cincinnati and beat the Falcons by 1.
Well, if you don't want to watch the Bills-Dolphins at 1 o'clock, you can always watch the Giants and Cardinals.
Imagine not wanting to watch the Bills win by 40.
Dude, what? I don't know.
Actually, I think it's going to be 21-10, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
my prediction yesterday was 11 points.
Yeah, I think that's what it'll be.
And Miami will need, like, a dumb Josh Allen play to get into scoring position for the touchdown.
Let's calm down on dumb Josh Allen plays. We're trying to limit those to 1 a game, Kyle.
Okay, so that's the one that puts you on the short field.
Just real quick on that game. I mean, what should the Bills win this game like 35-3 or something like that? Like, what?
They should destroy Miami.
Do you think it'll say a lot about the Bills if they do or don't?
No, because Miami has absolutely no pass rush, so Josh will have all day to stand back there and let things develop down the field. The Dolphins have no offensive line, Washington torched them up front, and Buffalo's got a more fearsome front seven than Washington does. So I just think there's such gross mismatches on both sides of the line of scrimmage in favor of Buffalo that it's going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah, but, so I understand that, but do you think whether the Bills destroy Miami or if it's 35-3 compared to 21-10 or 21-7 or something like that, do you like how much do you put into how Buffalo performs against Miami this week in terms of your overall outlook on the team?
On Buffalo?
Yeah.
Not much, because I think it's very easy to walk into a game against this team and say, as a successful team, and say, well, you know, we're going to take care of business no matter what. And if you start slow, I'm not going to crucify Buffalo for it.
I think it's an important, the overarching thing, the Bills need to win the game, but they also need to start acclimating some pieces back into their team, whether that's Taron Johnson at slot or Devin Singletary at running back, or, you know, getting their right tackle thing kind of figured. I think this is a good game for them to start doing those things.
Kind of make some experiments as far as personnel and putting some stuff back on guys' plates that
right.
haven't been there the last couple weeks.
Right, I do.
And that may have a detrimental effect on the end score of the game.
Right.
So that's why, kind of to the point that I was making earlier, no, I'm not going to crush Buffalo if they win by 2 touchdowns or 10 points and that's it.
Just win the game. And let's go play the Eagles next week, Kyle.
Are you excited for that game?
I think the Bills defense gives you so much confidence going into any game, you know? I'm excited for it because I think it's a good measuring stick in terms of, you know, people have and it's fair, right? Whatever, you could say that the Bills kind of you can go look at every single game really except for maybe the Giants game and say, well, they let the other team hang around or they put themselves in certain positions. Now they won the football game, but, you know, X, Y, and Z happened, and so like maybe you have your concerns. Well, I think if they were able to beat Philadelphia, it's a type of game that, you know, maybe people go, oh, you know. So that's interesting to me.
But it's also a very it's a difficult draw to get Philly at this point in the season because Philly right now is 3-3 and they play the Cowboys this week.
Sunday Night Football, yep.
So Philly's in buckle down mode. And kind of like what we saw when they played the Packers in Green Bay on Thursday night. And Philly, it's one of those games like whether it's not a position you're used to being in as a fan of Buffalo, like Buffalo does not need that game more than Philadelphia needs it.
I agree with you. And that's one thing that I've talked a lot about on Lockdown Bills recently has been, you know, how does a football team that hasn't played in a lot of big games respond to big games? And so far we saw that against the Patriots. And while everything else looked pretty good, not just Josh Allen the most, but the offensive line, the receivers, they all took a big shit in their pants. So, you know, maybe there's something to learn from that. But I know the Bills were in a playoff game in 2017, but this is a completely different offense.
Yeah, it's now. A very, very different dynamic all around.
Right.
So I think that's what I'm most looking forward to with this team is how do they kind of grow into the role of being playoff contenders and how do they respond in those situations? So there'll be some good clarity in the next couple weeks for Buffalo.
Excited for it.
That's going to do it for us today on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed. Thanks as always for listening. Come back and see us again tomorrow. Joe, I think we're due to talk about some college football.
Yeah, we'll talk to God about it tonight and we'll deliver a show for you tomorrow.
Amen to that. Come back and listen.